If you're South African right now and you are not into sports, well, I think you're missing out a hell of a lot. It's kind of like being Italian and not liking pasta, or being Italian not liking gelato, or speaking with far too much emotion. The reason I say this is because, well, last week at Loftus was one of the most amazing spectacles. It really was. The Bucks obviously playing against the Irish, but it felt like a real celebration of the nation. You know, we don't obviously have a lot of champions, a lot of really amazing things happening, but that cauldron of Loftus was just the coolest, most unifying sight I've seen in quite some time. Whether you were at the ground or watching on TV, you know, you had Dricka du Plessis walking around there with his world title middleweight belt from the UFC. Obviously, everyone's there to watch the box at home for the first time after the World Cup. And there was such a sense of pride. Granted, brandy induced, but there was such an incredible sense of pride around there, which really made us feel like sport is at like a whole new high right now. I mean, we even got a sports minister that might actually give a fuck about sports, which is completely unheard of. So today we're going to touch on that. We're also going to talk about SA versus Ireland because, well, the Bucks, on top of all the amazing pride, they beat Ireland by 7 points. Some people were saying it's too close to comfort, but the Bucks won by 1 point for 3 weeks in a row in the World Cup. 7 points is it's a thrashing. It's an absolute thrashing. So we'll also talk about Rassie's new game plan, if there is going to be the new game plan going forward. We'll talk about the All Blacks cutting it really fine at home against the English. We'll talk about the young French team who completely lost the plot after winning it away in Argentina. We've also got the Euros, of course, and we've got Wimbledon. It really is the best place to be right now to find out about anything in sport. Let's get into it. Welcome to it. Live on YouTube. And the benefit of being live on YouTube right now is you get to see our handsome faces and you get to engage with us. That is, of course, me, Ben Kopinski, and my co-host, Sandile Lishangas.
What's up, Ben? It's been a great week for South African sports. It's just been a great weekend for sports in general. Can't wait for us to get into it. I know you're excited to speak about the box, so I'm going to let us kick off there.
Yeah.
So you can just get into all the meat that you want to jump into.
So I've got to tell you about a little bit of meat. If we go, so last week we told you to play our clip drift game, right? The That's Gold game, where before the game you select a player. Now it's very, very simple. You go into clip drift, That's Gold, and well, you just basically get your details in there, you follow the instructions, and you spin for a player. So I got Malcolm Marks. You got Chesson Colby. James, you had...
James, you had...
Steenkamp.
Yeah, okay. But the point I'm making here is that the extra hits that we got going into this for our players.
Yeah.
But then I decided, like, well, my guy's not going to win. He's on the bench.
It's called cheating,
bro. So what I did was, I went to my burner phone, and then I got Peter Steptoe.
Of course, then you won.
And with that, I'm now top of our pool. So if you're playing this whole game... Obviously, you go onto the pools. You get the global pool, where I'm not kind of winning that.
Yeah.
But then on the bounce pool, I'm winning. I'm Bok B. So if you get into our pool, James, what's the pool code there? Because obviously, the reason I'm telling this is because you can win really amazing prizes along with having quite a bit of gears for your games.
Oh, you need me shortly. One second. I got it.
Yeah, James, I think that was kind of what we spoke about in the prep for this.
Guys, don't
you
worry.
Were going to show that. You got
this. Guys, you just got did the talking on the camera thing. I'll
guys,
do the behind the scenes.
You understand that we're here to kill James on the show.
No, we are. We absolutely are. James, this is not going so well. James, I think we should just move it. Okay, that's all right. Well, the point is, we'll touch on this later in the show again, is that once you get into these pools, it becomes hugely competitive. So, right, you spin for your player, and once you're there, it's quite simple. You pick your game. So this weekend, of course, SA versus Ireland again. You pick your game, you get your player. Sandile, you got Philly this week.
Yeah, let's go and bring it home. Philly LaRue, you know,
I'd
my goat.
I'd be pretty excited if I got Philly. Yeah?
As you would say, a stalwart.
He is. Especially in this new game plan of Rassie's. And then as soon as the game finishes, you go back onto your browser, and then you find your player, you spin, you can win prizes.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And can't wait to compete with the rest of the guys on the poll and on our group. So please, guys, do join us. The code will be here at some point. But yes, please do join us. It's an awesome way to play, you know, and shout out to Clip Drift for that.
I got you with the poll, guys. With the pool, it's 95A51, but it'll be on the screen.
Okay, thank you, James.
James, I mean, you say things, and my yeah.
So, let's get into it.
Like I said, you got Philly this week on the game, which could get you quite a few points. Yeah. New Bok game plan, kind of out of the blue. Were you a bit shocked by that? Because these different pods, they're running side to side. They're passing. They're not crashing into Oaks. They're kicking less.
But we did, you know, when we spoke about Tony Brown coming in, we did say that the game and with the rule changes that we are going to be a lot more enterprising. So I love the fact that we played with a lot more passing, a lot more enterprising, free-flowing. It wasn't just forwards crashing into it. Well, shout out to Sia and the big hit. We probably will talk about that at some point. But I love the way that we're playing. It gives us a different dynamism into our game. And I think the Irish were very shocked at that, because I think it's probably we've had the most passes in a lot of games in that one specific game. I think it's like double what we had in the World Cup.
Well, Jamie Donnelly had, I think, 11 passes. So I think that's more passes than he's had for the last 11 years. Because his modus operandi was, let's set up a second phase.
Yes.
But I mean, he's a majestic player. He's the world's best number 12. He can do whatever.
Yeah,
you can put him into a cricket team and probably score 50.
100%. The enterprising nature of the Springboks, I think it makes it more exciting. We saw like how, playing through, various phases. And outside of the pure physicality, I think, like I keep on repeating, is different dynamic. And people have guessed now. We're really seeing the various elements of our guys really showing that they actually do have gas. They're not just physical specimens.
So let me just take it back a couple of steps.
Yeah.
Bok game plan is always scrutinized, mostly out of jealousy from other countries that don't have the forwards that we have.
Mm-hmm.
2019 Rugby World Cup, we'd scraped our way into that final. We all remember watching that semi-final against Wales. You had two basically defensive-minded teams cancelling each other out for 80 hard minutes.
Yeah.
Bok eventually won that one. And then it came into the World Cup final and we ran the ball. We ran England ragged.
Yep.
And everyone's like, well, no one saw that coming.
Yeah.
I think it was the exact same thing this weekend, which shows that Rusty's always got a trick up his sleeve. We know that. Yeah. He's quite a tricky oak. But this whole thing about, as you pointed out, the rule changes, there's talk about November is going to be substitute rule changes, which might be anti-bomb squad. I'm not saying it like a bitter South African. It's not like the world's against us. But I think these things might come in. And Rusty is always going to be a visionary.
Yep.
And I also think after you've won two back-to-back World Cups, you almost have the pressure to be a visionary.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the basics. You often win rugby without the ball in hand. Saturday's game, England versus New Zealand.
Yep.
They kicked the crap out of that thing.
Yep.
And England could have won that one. I mean, it was very close.
It was so tight.
It was cagey and there was a lot of kicking. There was probably 20 to 30% less kicking in SA versus Ireland. Yep. Ireland must have been shocked.
Yep.
They must have been shocked. But in doing that, you're negating having Faf de Klerk and Andre Pollard. If you're going to be side to side running the ball all day, then pick Grant Williams, pick Monty Lubbock.
I still disagree with that. I still think there is going to be the elements where, if Andre Pollard knocked over a lot of those penalties, the closeness of the games is a bit.
It was a flattering scoreline for the Irish.
Okay. Yeah. If Andre Pollard was on form, we would have cruised through that game. But you'd still do need those traditional elements, as I would say. I hate to say that, but those traditional elements. And I think those guys bring stability. As I said, there are a lot of young guys coming through that system, so you kind of do need that stability. Ideally, what I would have liked to happen in that game is, given, that a little bit of cushion, if we got through all those points, let the young guys come play in. And, as you're saying, Grant Williams, et cetera, yeah, come through those lines. But I think coming through the next game, we will have that, cushion, and then, you'll the rest of the guys can come through.
So with the whole thing around this game plan, anybody who's been watching anything with the box the last few months, it's because Tony Brown has come in. Now, Tony Brown is an attack coach of Kiwi nature, so it's in his DNA to basically just throw the ball around. So obviously, my favorite rugby podcast is the Keo and Zell show.
Yep.
It's their rugby guys. They talk about stuff. They break it down.
Yep.
Super smart guys. And Zell's made a really good point this week to say that Tony Brown has this style because he's come from teams who were always smaller and faster than everyone else.
Yeah.
So, you stick to your knitting in life. It's like he's going to have that game plan. But now, is that the right game plan when you got the players that can run over people?
But we got gas. And I think you need to have, like we keep on saying, we have to have a different element into our game. So I know a lot of us love the fact that we swung the ball. We didn't just kill. We didn't just box kick. So I think it brings some excitement and different energy into the game. And we've got gassy guys. I think you give those guys, the room to actually express themselves, as they always say in soccer. And they really did get to express themselves and it really looked amazing.
So now we're at sea level. Obviously, the ball doesn't go as far. So our kicking is not going to save us so much. It might be more percentage-wise.
Yeah.
It will be a slightly different game. And of course, now the Irish know what we're going to do. The Irish must have been so perplexed in that first half hour. It's like, why are these Oaks not
just
putting
throwing that ball
kick
everywhere
after kick and running? Yeah. Why is like the thought of Damien de Allerdy not running through that channel all day? Bundy Aki must have been thinking,
what is going on here?
But again, it's like, obviously the Bucks aren't just going to suddenly throw everything out with the bathwater here. They're still going to know what their strengths are. They're still going to have the forwards doing what they do. They're still with the bomb squad, as seen and then moaned about by Matt Williams. So how they evolve from here is going to be absolutely fascinating, because the Irish are now going to go, okay, if you want to play side-to-side rugby, we're going to step it up in our breakdowns. Can they got the game for that? I was excited about the first test. I'm absolutely, what's the word? Frothing for the second one. Because it's just, there are so many dynamics here for the second test. We got the Bucks have proven they're world champs. They won by 7. They could have won by 27. But if the ref or the TMO was against them on the day, they could have lost by 7. There was all these little variables. I still think it was a flattering scoreline for the Irish. But 100%. Now, the Irish have, let's be honest, they've won fuck all since the Six Nations. Okay, well done. They won the Six Nations. That's like winning the Kasafa Cup a lot of the time.
Thank you.
Shout out to everyone.
Wherever we are in the Kasafa Cup, if we're still playing. As you know, the show hates the Kasafa Cup. So
it's not that we hate it, it's just we haven't got the bandwidth for it. So we've got the Irish that they need something out of the season. Leinster, Munster, nothing. These Oaks, it's the last game. They haven't come here to win one game, as Conor Murray said. Although Conor, the best case scenario here is to win one game. They can't win the series, but if they get one win against us, it's basically breaking rights.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be a lot more clinical. You know, I think, you know, this is the first time those guys are playing in that type of system, free flowing. And I think the feedback to the guys is, let's be a lot more clinical. Let's be a lot more, you know, let's put the hands on them, especially with all the stuff that they've said, even post, you know, our win. You know, it was always about you throwing in the bomb squad. How safe is it? How safe is it for the players to come on? I was just like, when do we ever beat the Irish legitimately, you know?
We didn't play against them much. But, I mean, the last game was 2017. And that's another thing about, you know, here I am. Potentially, I'm coming across as knocking this new game plan and not saying it's right for this team, but we've had our previous game plans against these Oaks. Only now that we've thrown the ball around a bit and run away from the players, so to speak, we've actually beaten the Irish.
I think, like I said, I think Tony Brown brings a real difference to how we attack the Irish specifically. They're not prepared for us to just throw the ball and go to chance and not just play up and unders. And so I think I really love this game plan, because even when we go play other nations, now what are we going to play? What are we going to throw at them? Are we going to just come physical, or are we just going to be nice and quick and throw the ball around? Play real try rugby, entertaining rugby, as they would say. You know, I really love Tony Brown. I think, you know, it's going to be an exciting, you know, future with him at the helm.
Yeah, well, it's extra gears, perhaps. Exactly. Extra tools for this amazing box.
Exactly.
Box. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Obviously, the Irish
jump in there.
Yes, Jen. Okay.
Someone's called you guys out on the calls that you make.
It's not even the end of the show yet. Right? Give us a chance. We're building into it.
But I got to ask you, like, how have we gotten it so wrong if these are the calls now? Like, this box squad's so strong, and what are we thinking?
James, you're conflating issues here. Our calls and the box are two very, very different things here. So, Kale, I mean, look, it's been difficult. Our calls haven't been great in the Euros. I will defend my rugby call to death from last week. Those Argentinians, I don't know if they were drunk. I don't know if they had big nights the night before. Those Oaks were just ridiculous against the inexperienced French side. But we'll get to those guys, because that's a story in itself.
I'll take responsibility for my calls. They were educated calls. We just got them wrong, but we'll come back to you on that. James, you're betraying me so early in the show.
Yeah, thanks, James. Just throw us on the river here after not giving us screens from the... There are, of course, a lot of other internationals on the go right now. 100%. It's a great time of year when, obviously, Northern Hemisphere traditionally end of season tours, and we have our beginning season, although there is no such thing as a season anymore. Oaks just play.
We just play.
England went to New Zealand. New Zealand, whole new regime under Scott Robertson.
Yeah.
It was Scott Robertson, not Robertson. Razor.
Razor.
Razor Robertson. I think that's what they call him anyway. Were you surprised by the result being so tight?
And we've disrespected English rugby for the longest time. I think me and you, especially in the studio,
it's easy to.
we said it was flattering how far they got into the World Cup.
Yeah. But that, you know, in saying that, they've got that kind of World Cup game plan where they eke their way through. I mean, we saw in 2007 there were nowhere they took us in the fun.
New Zealand were lucky to win. And that was the crazy thing about that game. And when I watched it, I was like, it was just a matter of it could have gone either way. And New Zealand, for them, I think they've got to really go back and be clinical now, you know, because that English team is willing to punish and they're willing to play good old Johnny Wilkins rugby and just kick for posts as well. You know, it was a very boring game compared to ours.
Yeah.
It was a very technical
game. Well, it was like test match rugby, as they would say.
It was really like brr, 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 the whole game. I think we got to give a lot more respect to the English team. I think they are here to play. And they are here to have a lot of good games. And New Zealand are in a transitional phase, but it's New Zealand. You never really stressed about it. They will get it right, you know.
So in saying that they're in a transitional phase, I was perplexed by the Damien McKenzie fly-half option. He's a fantastic Super Rugby player.
Yeah.
He's Super Rugby for Pacifica. Specifica.
We get what you're trying to say.
I'll be specifically about Specifica. Yeah. I think he's a great guy for that. I just don't think, even with the most amazing pack of forwards giving him go forward ball, I don't think he's a good enough international fly half when you've got Burden Barrett.
Yep.
Obviously, Richie Mungo was, I take it he was injured. Or,
yeah, I think he was injured.
I don't know enough about Middle Earth rugby, to be honest with you. So they got options. Not I just don't think he's a great option. And a game against England,
yeah,
you need a guy who's a proper general to kind of run the show there.
Yeah.
Of course, this next test match, because England came close, let's be honest, under the roof in, who's it, Dunedin?
Where deep?
Under the greenhouse effect.
Yes, yeah.
They're now playing Eden Park. Yeah. New Zealand haven't lost to Eden Park for 30 years. 3-0.
Yeah.
You know who they lost to?
They probably lost to us.
No, the French.
Oh.
No, the French.
I think, look, they weren't clinical. New Zealand's always going to be clinical. I think they knew that it's going to be a lot tighter. England, I think they took them lightly like everybody else does, you know. They got to be a lot more clinical. They got to play. They've got to decide how they want to play. Do they want to play
clinical one more time? You got to finish your beer.
Don't dare me. They've got to decide how they want to play. Do they want to play enterprising rugby? Do they want to play structured rugby? Because they were caught in the middle a lot of times, and that led to a lot of ill discipline,
yeah,
a lot of giveaway and penalties. So I don't want to say the word. They've got to be a lot more boisterous in how they execute.
But it's an interesting thing because new coach, new regime, I almost felt like there was an air of that with the box now with this new game plan and different elements because the box looked nervy in that second half. The All Blacks looked nervy. Yeah. Both of them hugely relieved.
Yeah.
Both of those teams, I think, will have more handsome victories this weekend, which brings us to Australia versus Wales. And the enthusiasm and intensity just drops straight away.
But I want to say something about this Australia team. I watched that game, and maybe it's because Wales are garbage. You know, Wales are almost there, but they're never there. You know,
they've lost their last six.
Yeah, I mean, like, we need to bring somebody else in. But Australia, those young guys are throwing that ball around. The second try was absolutely spectacular. He took on everybody, and he scored. I think because the standard is so low now at Australia, they can actually take the time to build through now the ranks, build that team up again. They know more real superstars. Which
They've got a good coach, Joe Schmidt. I mean, he's a Kiwi who coached Ireland, and he's been around.
Yeah.
And, I just can't take a team seriously that has a captain as a fullback.
They played great, and I like where Australia's going, throwing the ball around as well, but also like winning the real stuff in the middle, the dirty work. They feel like they're playing with less pressure because nobody has expectations for them. I'm not just saying that because it is Wales.
Yeah.
But I like where Australia is going. And they played such a great game. Out of the three games, that was probably the most exciting one, except that crazy one that we're going to talk about next. Australia team is absolutely amazing.
I didn't even know what to tell you about the Argentina-France game. Firstly, it was on after the BOC game, so everyone was way too hammered to really watch this thing and care about it. But I've got some real problems with Argentina rugby, disappointments around them.
Okay.
They remind me like Bangladesh in cricket. There was a chance that Bangladesh were going to get some funds, they could get a bigger player pool. Yeah. And then you look at that team now, and that Shakib Ullahsan, who's like 70 years old, he's still their jamming star player.
I'm like, how's that still happening? How is he still jamming?
It's like Argentina they take players, they go play in England and France, they go play in Europe, and it's amazing. I don't think, and again, I speak under correction here, obviously, because there's a lot of hot takes that go into this, especially when it comes to Argentinian rugby. I don't think these guys have alignment camps. The BOC have extended camps, squads, alignment, all these different things. It might just be a money thing.
I think so.
Because let's be honest, look at Springbok tickets and merchandise and all that kind of stuff. These guys are making bank right now.
100%.
They've got an official energy drink. They've got an official shoe partner. They've got official, you name it, they've got it. There's like 48 different sponsors. Argentina, since day one, have had Visa on their shirt.
Are they still there? That's just an old kid.
But I don't see how these guys have any alignment camps. So, yes, they've got test caps. They've got experience. But they come together, and they were horseshit last week.
Yeah,
against a French team, I think the back three were uncapped.
Who did France? I was like, let me not even get into who France.
The Big Oaks weren't keen to mess up their summer.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, we've had such a long rugby season. Can we chill out?
The Lighties can go to South America, go over Joel, play some rugby.
Here's my thing, then, and I don't want to be a hater. I think we gave too much pressure to Argentina being this great, the next great, you know, South American, you know, rugby nation or South American rugby nation.
They did have a pedigree, though. I mean, they had the best scrum in rugby. That's no longer a thing. They had Augustin Pichot, who was like an amazing maverick scrum half. They 100%. Had players. They had structures. They were beating teams. They ended up beating everyone in the rugby championship.
And then it just deteriorates.
Yeah.
So I think there is a decline, but it's naturally what happens with a lot of rugby programs. I do think maybe there is a turnaround, and I still do think as a continent, South America is still going to offer us a lot more in terms of rugby. And, you know, as, you know, BH said last week, we have to start, you know, whether it's us as a rugby community, making sure that we plow in and give systems to go there to make sure we build that game, it's only going to grow the game. So I think rugby needs to start, you know, filtering, you know, its talents into that and developing the structures, because the problem is the structure. I don't think it is the game. I think it's the camps, the structures, how we tour, where we tour, how do we get better from coaches, players, etc. Because I don't think it's purely just talent.
So you know what I also think it is? I'm actually going to make this point. If you mind just topping up my beer. I'm going to make this point because I'm going to shock you here. I have intimate knowledge of South American rugby systems. I've actually worked with some of these teams on a previous business of mine. And they've got a thing called Super Rugby Americas. Now, what that is that you've got Argentinian teams, you've got Uruguayan teams, you've got Paraguayan, you've got American, Canadian. It's whoever plays rugby in that side of the world, they're in Super Rugby Americas. But in all honesty, I think the level was probably pre-Curry Cup at best. So they've got that as a base, and there's a lot of young talent coming through there. And then there's this gulf, because then you get the guys who are going to go play at the European teams. How do they then gel that all together in order to make sure they've got a cohesive international team? Because what that structure was I've just described here was probably good enough like 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
But look how far the Box have gone in the last 4 or 5 years. Look how far the Irish, the French. It's like the Ricky Fowler effect in golf for me. Ricky didn't get worse. Everyone just got better.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just feel like Argentina and that whole side of the world, it's like they're trying. Mm. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
But the thing that always fucks them is that everyone else is going further and faster.
Yeah, we've for the sake of rugby growing, we need to develop that side of the, you know, that side of the continent and putting in those structures. I don't know how we do it. I think you probably have more understanding. Maybe putting their development teams in some sort of Curry Cup structure, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But we can't lose Argentina as, you know, a flag bearer. It's just a tough reality.
You know, it's like when you want to be a third world country who's economically strong, the first world countries are always going faster.
Yep.
And I think that's the reality with Argentina. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about in football, and I want to get quite heavy into tennis this week.
Okay, cool. That was probably good.
The only week of the year I'm going to say that.
Okay.
Okay, so football, obviously, we're into the Euros, into the finals right now.
Yeah.
What was your take from the quarters last week? Were you surprised by any of the results? So, you know, Carla, obviously, at the start of the show, gave Cindy a little of a stick. I know that comment was about him, not so much me.
It was about us as a show and an entity.
In the quarters last week, Sindile went for results, and he was saying that teams are going to either win or lose. And there were three draws out of four. Mm-hmm. So, again, is it pressure? Are the guys playing too much football? Are they too lethargic for the big game? Or are they just too conservative because they don't back themselves?
A lot of questions at once. I'll start with, you know, the teams that I thought would get through. Start with Germany. Unlucky. I think I'll go with that. Unlucky. I'm going to back your team. Don't worry. There's nothing more I can do than talk about Spain. But I want to deal with Germany. Germany were unlucky.
Can I just say they were not lucky. Toni Kroos shouldn't have been in that field after 20 minutes.
No.
Their talisman should have been off.
Listen, it's the Toni Kroos show. I told you it was cruise control.
Toni Kroos privilege from minute 4.
Toni Kroos privilege. Look, I agree with you. Toni Kroos shouldn't have even gone to halftime. I don't think he should have played. I think he was, jaded throughout of all that football that he had played throughout the year, going from a Champions League final straight into, you know, the Euros. No rest time. I think that is a big part that they play in. France were underwhelming throughout. And I think that was a big issue with them holistically throughout the tournament.
Well, when you say underwhelming, there wasn't a single goal.
What is below underwhelming? They were whelming or whatever, you know?
They were not whelming anybody.
They were shocking throughout. And I think, once again, it goes back to too many big names, lack of team cohesion, and a lack of team chemistry, and a team led by Kylian Mbappe, which was always going to be my issue. I do not think Kylian Mbappe has any leadership skills.
It's like having a fullback in rugby as your captain.
As you had said. And then getting to the other side, Netherlands.
Sorry, just while you added, do you notice that Mbappe played better when he took the stupid mask off?
Whatever, he was giving him no structural support to his face. Do you know when we were talking about players who are ideally going to win, you know, player of the tournament? It was Mbappe. It was De Bruyne. It was Jude. I think Jude might just randomly take it. But all these so-called big nations have not gone far. I think it's what you alluded to earlier. It's overplaying throughout the season, lack of team camps before going to Euros, and a nation like Spain where majority of those players play together in the same league, and there aren't really major changes in how you play from your different clubs to how you play nationally, having actually a structure going through holistically how you play.
Key continuity.
Key continuity. And now Spain, who are probably going to win it, they have such great growth in terms of what happens in the next World Cup. When they go into the next World Cup, those young boys will be men. And this is exactly what happened with their golden generation when they won the World Cup and the Euros. You know, so I think it's going to be such an exciting time for Spain. Again,
if you're not the biggest football fan, when Sandile says young boys, he's not being flippant.
I'm not being flippant. 16 years old. He scored the winning goal.
Lamine Yamal is 16. I found something so funny about this guy this week. He was, in some strange world, he was bathed by Messi.
And why is there a picture?
There's a video, there's image. Like, I don't know if James is going to bring this up, but I mean, there's imagery of this oak being bathed by Messi. It was like baptized for greatness.
James, please confirm if that photo is real or not, because it can't be like, you know, Messi bathing that guy. And, you know, I think it's a big thing with going into the Euros, probably moving in the future, is how do you space it out? Because you've got a deep league season, you've got a deep Champions League,
where all the money is.
You've got all the big players trying to run in, and some of them going to the Olympics as well now. So we're going to have an issue of big teams who aren't going to, you know, fulfill their success. Because that's what all the issues are. That's what they're all saying. They say, we never got a break. We're not at our, you know, at our top shape. Well, I don't necessarily agree.
You know what? Maybe this is a bit too sensationalist, but it's maybe a hangover from the Qatar World Cup.
Oh, yes, and the World Cup.
Because you think about it, that's where it starts with overplaying. Yes. Your entire system was thrown on its head.
Yeah.
And the Oaks all fired well into late November there.
Yeah, so that's...
straight back. And then now, maybe the boring nature, because I've got to be honest with you. I like football. Yeah. But for me, it's a bit like marijuana. Everyone talks about it as a really cool thing to do. And then it's nothing but a letdown for me. Talk it up. It's like, I don't need to do this again.
Yeah, and you can see compared to the AFCON where, you know, they're probably less goals scored throughout the tournament in 90 minutes. Big nations going in and out. Goal differences, 1-0, going to extra time.
It wasn't captivating. You know,
I don't want to gloat about the AFCON compared to the Euros, but it feels like the AFCON was so much more entertaining compared to the Euros. It felt like everybody just limped through the Euros, and a lot of these players just want to get through it. But my predictions were all wrong, guys. I'll admit to it, guys. Yes, my predictions. Actually, my Netherlands prediction got further than I thought it would. But there is one prediction of mine that is still alive. That is, England are the favorites. And even though they've limped through this tournament, they've played no football. They've just done whatever to get through it. England have been there.
I'm misstepping right now. They were the favorites because Superbets told us they were the favorites.
Guys, if you go back, I called England. I said they have the best striker. James, you remember me calling. They're the best striker in Europe, and they're the best midfielder in Europe. Those two should be able to take them through all the way to win it. I did say that. Please cut a clip post of this and bring it back. But
James,
this was your call, but then you watched this same team through this tournament. Through it. The most boring team the whole tournament.
Yeah. But you know what? They are the reincarnate of the rugby team. They limp through the World Cups, but they get into finals.
I think it's an English thing. And they've said crazy things like Gareth Southgate might be knighted.
If he wins, hard. Paul Collingwood was knighted after he won the Ashes, didn't
I'm just saying.
Paul Collingwood was given a knighthood after shining the ball for Freddie Flintoff to bowl through the Aussies.
So this is like the crazy thing. And,
not a great benchmark.
And you know what? And they may win it, and we just going to continue our lives. So that's the story of the Euros. But I think, you know what? There are two different stories that I want to talk about. Spain, that young team, playing really great nations to get to the final. If they lift it, it's a great testament for Spanish, you know, football and their academy system and how they're getting young players through. Just to believe in a 16-year-old. There's a right winger somewhere who's 25 years old who's saying, how could I not walk into this team? And they backed him, and he's probably going to be one of the players of the this tournament.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Did you not notice that when they were playing against Germany, they were coasting. They were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they took off their two young wingers. Germany were back in the game. They were back in the game straight away. Almost as soon as those guys walked off the field, they were back in.
I have a fun fact for that, actually.
Tell us.
So Spain have been fined every game that Yamin Lamal has played.
Because he can't drive to the stadium?
Well, it has to do with his age. You can't work under the age of 18 in Germany. And so in one of the games they pulled him off to avoid the fine, but then for the rest of them they were just like, screw it, let's keep him on the field.
That is crazy.
James, that's a great fun fact. Yeah. Shout out to you, James.
He also did his homework on this Euros photos, many photos of it hidden doing homework in the hotel room.
So. Okay, the second thing wasn't this. You kind of pushed it a bit farther.
So Euros is going to be exciting coming to the final. England,
who just played their best game. Let's give them the credits of that. They played shite until this point, but like Phil Foden, all the guys that were firing, especially in that first half, they were firing.
Phil Foden played great. And why he couldn't do that throughout the tournament, once again, Gareth Southgate got to get it right. Backing his young guys, Kobbie Mainoo came through, jammed as well. You know, Man United guy, got to do it. And for me, it'll always be Harold Kane has to lift something this season.
The rest of his players around him.
Yeah, you know, Harold, my goodness, the time is now, like John Cena said. Please do it for yourself.
The Oaks getting the rub of the green. That wasn't a penalty last night.
That was not a penalty. Did you
see the soccer handball?
Yes, it was the soccer handball.
Pretty obvious.
They kick boots, and I'm like, it felt like, you know, the T20 a little bit.
Well, I'm not going to say it's match fixing. I don't know enough about football to even suggest this much, but that was a huge break for England. But this is what tournaments are, right? Yeah. You've got to take your breaks.
100%.
And Kane, to his credit, he stepped up. Amazing penalty. Bottom left. You cannot save that penalty. Yeah.
Side
so good
net. Great, you know, Harry Kane is world class, and you know we've slated him, but I hope Harry Kane lifts something for himself. His legacy definitely deserves this. He's England. I think he's England's top goal scorer now. I think he's past Wayne Rooney. He deserves something, just you know, so we can forgive him. You know, okay. Yes, James.
I just got like a really quick thing just before you guys move off of it. Right, is like big match temperament in football is pretty huge, right? Yeah. And this Spanish squad's quite young.
Yeah.
The England squad, on the other hand, you've got Bellingham, who plays for Madrid every second weekend. He's in Champions League finals. He's got that big match temperament. Yeah. Spain, young players, young squad. Is that going to be like, do you think that's going to be the difference?
I don't think so, because even that 16-year-old Oak, he's already got 50 games for Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean,
Moses.
Yeah, that guy's been jamming for Barcelona, but I think there's two different narratives here. Spain, if they lose, it's not going to be the end of the world. You know, young guys, they'll come again. They'll do it again. They'll say, oh, it's a building block. England have to do it. England literally were favorites.
Yep.
They've got a Ballon d'Or guy who has to close it off by winning this. The pressure is really on England. And England have had this pressure the last Euros as well. And now everyone's like, guys, you've got to kind of close it. Football, you know, needs to come back home to football. I think Spain will have an easier game. They'll play their natural game as they've been doing throughout, because all these big games, they've been written off. France written off, Germany written off. We're like, guys, they're going to, and they just played their game. And I think going into playing another big final, they're going to play their game. If they get beat, they get beat. If they win, it is a testament for the Spanish guys backing their youth and, you know, moving to the future.
England from Balens to Ballon d'Or. There's the Netflix special right there.
Yes, sir.
So, obviously, Copa America, we haven't really spoken about this much. Argentina in the final, no surprise there.
Surprise?
Well, surprise to Drake. Drake bet on Canada to beat Argentina. He hates money.
I'm not going to do any Drake slander. That's my guy. But, you know, he backed his country. So, Copa's been dope. The one thing before we get to the finals I want to talk about, it's kind of weird seeing the end of Brazil. Like, this is it. Like, I can see, like, they're not coming back. For a while, you know, you know, I come from an era of the golden era of Brazil. Kaká, Ronaldinho, Cafu.
Oh, absolutely.
Dida.
Fat Ronaldo.
Fat Ronaldo, small Ronaldo.
Yeah.
You know, fanny cut Ronaldo. You know, all of these Ronaldos. There's no other ways. That's what it's called, guys. It's not me. It kind of felt like it was too much for Vinicius to carry through, and which is super disappointing because everybody wanted, you know, Argentina-Brazil final, but yeah, they're done. But Colombia, once again, James Rodriguez in a big international tournament, taking his guys deep into a tournament. I don't know what it is about James.
I forgot about James, eh? Wasn't he pretty handy in the 2010 World Cup?
That's how he got to Madrid.
Yeah.
And then he was terrible at Madrid. Okay, let me not say he was terrible. He was average at Madrid.
That was a long time ago. Yes. He must be in his mid-30s now.
Yeah, and then he did it again. He's late. I think he's late 30s. He did it again in another big tournament, got another big contract. Now he's going one more time of Copa America against Messi. And I think you know what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen. Argentina are going to take it home. Just adds another pin to Messi being the greatest footballer of all time. And also this
all one, while Ronaldo stews on this.
And there's nothing wrong with being number two. That's okay, guys.
Awesome. You know, Powers proof is that.
Number two. The Copa has been great. It's just gone low-key, very under the Euros, which we, you know...
Yeah, but look, I mean, time zones, there's only so much sport that you can you can actually have. There really is just only so much. And the Copa's got its own appeal. It's got its fanfare.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably say more attractive fans actually watching.
Is this,
like, I'm just going on what I see on social media.
Is this what you want to pull up right now?
I'm not pulling up anything.
But I think what was also really cool about Copa was how deep the other nations are coming into it. Teams like Canada, who we've traditionally written off in terms of football, they ran pretty deep. They faced Argentina. There was not, you know, eventually at some point, you know, talent, you know, over classes, you know. But Canada is going to be good. I can see they've invested a lot in that program.
Well, the World Cup's going there, isn't it? That's the next FIFA World Cup.
And, you know, we hosted a World Cup, so, you know, I'm not saying much, but how deep they got into, you know, Copa is very great. And, you know, we like to always talk about how different programs are growing. Canadian football clearly moving way ahead of USA football because they've just been crashing and going out. So USA got to watch out for Canada, and I think they're going to become
It's kind of weird, hey? Like, the USA thing has just never kicked on. They had the World Cup, what, 1994?
94.
Obviously, they dominate the women's game.
Yeah.
But the men's game has just never kicked on. They had the MLS. Beckham went there. Messi went there. It's not like they haven't had some impetus.
Yeah, and they've had talent that's gone.
Yeah.
That's got, you know, Landon Donovan, all these people, you know, Tim Howard, they've gone into play into Europe, but there's never been a kick on. There's never been a full-on development. And I think that's the problem with their league. It's more of a marketing league. They've got people like Suarez, Messi, all these guys, Busquets coming in and really taking away from, you know, American players developing their skills at a high level and selling it out and getting the experience. But Copa was cool. Colombia versus Argentina. It's going to be a lot closer, but you know they've got the GOAT. And they've got Di Maria's final run. Di Maria said he's going to retire after this from Argentina. I don't think holistically, because I think he goes to MLS. That team will probably go down, you know, once they win Copa as, you know, the team that really resurrected Argentinian football. And yeah, I'm you know, shout out to Messi for winning this. And I'm say that as a strong CR7 guy. Yes, you're going to cement yourself as the greatest football player of all
time. And also, he's doing it with grace.
Yes.
That's the thing. If you were to be a Ronaldo fan, even the most one-eyed Ronaldo fan with a penchant for shirtless men would not deny the fact that he has become belligerent. He's become tempestuous, I think is the word. He's become just a bit of a brat on the field. And for a 39-year-old man to be called a brat is never a good look.
It's terrible. And I think it's he doesn't know that he's aged. He can't see it, that he's kind of lost.
Six-packs give you a weird perception of that, your own importance, huh?
You know, that whole thing.
That's why we're so cool.
And, you know, Messi has just always been such a team guy. Whereas, you know, Ronaldo's always been like, it's me. I'm going to miss the penalty. I'm going to do all these crazy things and make it about him. And, you know, Messi's always been a team guy. Let's rally around. Let's do it for Argentina.
Also helps when you're shorter, I guess, because then you don't have to be like Ronaldo's a big statuesque man.
Yeah.
And someone made a really bad copper statue about him.
Yes, that was crazy.
But the thing about Messi is like he needs to be the team man because he's not 6 foot and beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Ronaldo's beautiful. I'm just saying he's a handsome man.
It's okay. He's a handsome guy. He's a handsome guy.
I'm not the first person to say this. It's going to happen. So yeah, that's pretty much it for your football for the weekend. I mean, I'm the point I was making that maybe glossed over a little bit too much is that I've always wanted to be a football fan.
Yeah.
I try. I really do.
Yeah.
it's just so difficult. And I got to be honest with you, the only reason I've been watching as much as I have is because I want to keep up with you on the show. Otherwise, I would watch something else.
We got something that could sway you to get you to watch
more. Is it more stats about young kids?
No, Copa America in Colombia, some stuff happened.
Oh.
Doesn't that make you want to watch
James,
football?
It's a family show. Don't bring the level down here.
Guys, we gave James a mic.
Come over here. Is bringing in...
We gave James a mic and gave him some creative freedom. Guys, we apologize about that.
Yeah, if you listen just on the podcast, James is basically putting smut on the screen. Yes.
Oh my goodness, James.
Jeez, James, we give you a microphone. Look what happens. Okay, so look, the point I was making is that I think that football is always going to be the world's biggest game for many, many reasons. I just feel like the Europe 2024 for me has like really drawn up. Like there's so much of it. It could be a lot more exciting. And I think people give football a free pass a lot of the time about not being this great game. You know, it's not getting new audiences because they just go, oh, we're the biggest.
Yep.
Rugby gets scrutinized all the time about they must change their rules. They must do this. They must become more inclusive.
Yeah.
I'm finding football quite boring to get into. And this whole play acting thing is also just the worst. We saw now in Copa, the Uruguayan Oak went into the stands and actually had a proper bloodsome. What's with this, like the fans? The guys can take punishment. So this whole play acting thing, it's getting worse and worse, making a mockery of the sport.
So look, that incident was, you know, it was an ugly thing that happened in football. There obviously was the VIP stands where the Uruguayan players were, Uruguayan players' families were, and some of the Colombian fans attacked them. And I don't know, Nunez decided to lose his mind. He climbed onto the banister and a couple of other guys came in and they got into a fist fight to protect his family. I understand that it was just an ugly scene. You know, you hate to see that in football. It really sucks. But the one thing I didn't want to say is that there's just been too much football this year.
Yeah, it's pretty what it comes down to.
Yeah, way too much football. Even me as a football lover, it was tough to keep up with all of these things.
Well, I mean, you already mentioned it. We had AFCON. Kosovo Cup. Okay, Wimbledon. Or if you're pretentious, SW19. I always hate it when they say that.
Is that what they call it? The pretentious people?
No, you always get those people. Like I watch Supersport Blitz like anyone who watches sports. And you get the guy who's obviously been on a double, working through the night. He's already talked about Wimbledon 17 times. He'll be like, and double more action from SW19.
There's a lot of tennis.
Like, dude, the average person has no idea what you're talking about there. It's Wimbledon. It's the All English Club if you really want to get snooty. So tennis is great. Especially at Wimbledon. Yeah. It's kind of like the Augusta of tennis. It's the Masters of tennis.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm a massive Jannik Sinner fan. He's out. I want to know, why
doesn't anybody talk about that call in the comments?
I didn't make that call. I was waiting for this weekend to make that call.
James, if anybody, please pull up the footage of him making the call about our faves. I said Carlos is going to go the whole way. And then he calls. He said Sinner. No, of course, Sinner, number one ranked. He's going to go do it all the way. That is there.
Sorry. Okay, but like, you know,
I hope that guy remembers that.
He's the number one seed, but in the quarters, he's playing the fifth seed. How did that work out?
Yeah, that
because I always thought like the whole thing about being seeded is that you can then not have an easier run, but it definitely helps you to be the top dog.
Yeah.
And here he is playing the fifth seed in the quarters. Medvedev's a great player.
Great.
Fish on grass.
Yeah.
And then to make it worse, Sinner is ill. Apparently he gets ill quite a lot. I don't know if that's a ginger thing, but he's just... So he said, like, the last 2 years, what would normally happen if he was ill, he would have retired. He's called a couple of, no returns. But he kept playing, and he was like, I've got to learn, I've got to do this. And ultimately, he did lose because he was ill, he's under the weather, whatever.
Yeah.
And shout out to Medvedev.
Yeah, Medvedev's an awesome tournament.
So he's out, which then brings us to ultimately what we're all hoping for, which is a repeat of last year's final, which is Carlos Alcaraz versus
Where to pronounce it correct? Carlos who?
Carlos Alcaraz.
Okay,
we already worked this out. You've got to do other things with your mouth at the end.
Oh, wow.
But he's playing against Gotovic.
Gotovic, yep.
So, Novak, I think this is 13th semi. Yeah. He's won 7 times. He's been in 9 finals at SW19 at Wimbledon. Obviously, coming back from knee surgery, you wouldn't think he'll be the favorite if he goes up against Carlos, who will run you ragged. I mean, that oak is basically the love child of Quacker Smith and a solar panel.
Yes.
And he is a talented individual. He really
amazing.
Is.
Amazing.
So if it goes to that, then I will say your oak is the favorite. But
that is the semis. That is the semis locked in.
So the semis are locked in.
Yeah.
I've made notes. So basically, because Djokovic got a walkthrough over this Aussie in the quarters because he had a sore hip or something, Djokovic will then play Musetti, who is this new Italian heartthrob. Italian tennis players coming through the mixer. So he'll play against Musetti. So something for the ladies there. And then Alcaraz versus Medvedev in the first semi. So those all take place tomorrow, which is obviously Friday.
Yeah.
You don't want to like discredit the Oaks because it always happens like this. Everybody wants a certain final.
Yep.
And you go into it, there's still semifinals to be played here. I reckon obviously Alcaraz has a much tougher game.
100% tougher. Medvedev has been balling. He has been balling. And I think it's going to be a lot closer. You know, that I was hoping that Carlos gets Musetti.
Lorenzo Musetti. Dashing gent with flowing hair.
Yeah, with flowing hair. But this is going to be a dogfight for Carlos. It's going to be a tester. And then hopefully we get the final that everybody wants.
Exactly.
Because the other side, we don't know. We'll get there, but we don't know on the other side who is going to be in that women's final. So
the women's, I mean, again, whenever I talk about women's sports, I want to talk about women's sport the way I talk about men's sports. Mm. But sometimes I come across quite disparaging against men's sport, as I would just general banter.
Yeah.
Women's tennis is such a lottery. You can watch these games. Okay, so Iga Świątek, we know she's the best. She went out, I think, in the third round.
Yeah.
It happens, okay?
Yeah.
But you'll watch these games, and they're all over the place. Like, it'll be like a 6-1, 7-5, 6-3 win. And then you get unseeded players coming through. You never know where. Like, if I had to sit here, which I did, obviously, 3 weeks ago, and say, who's going to be in the semis? Yeah. I know I can get two of those players.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I'm pretty sure I can name two of those players. I don't think you can ever do that in women's tennis.
I think it's a testament to the game. I know, like, sometimes we'll slam it. I think it's super competitive.
I think it's cool.
I think it's super good. I think rankings don't matter in the women's game, which is dope. It's play what's in front of you, which is absolutely amazing.
Good point.
And it's super exciting because we're not going to be able to call it. You know, there'll be a new champion today, another new champion in the French Open, you know. And I think that's what I love about the women's game. You know, rankings don't mean anything anymore.
It really is. It's such a lottery. I mean, we saw that Emma Raducanu, I think her name is. I mean, she won the US Open as a wild card, as in like a, I rocked up this week and I want to play.
Yeah, and it's what you were talking about. Like, when Serena left, it was like, let's see who's actually going to be the GOAT now and the leader of the sport moving forward. Because I thought Coco would go in deep.
Yeah.
She got crashed out, you know. And
just not hitting the straps where it needs to be. I mean, we spoke about Iga Świątek, obviously, at the French Open. I mean, she has won the most Grand Slams to the point of 23 years old. So she obviously has the pedigree.
Yeah.
Maybe she had one bad game. Mm-hmm. So the semis, which are taking place right now, actually, we've lost James. James could have maybe got us, given us a score there, but don't worry. No, you carry on, James. Get back to you in a sec. Vekic versus Paolini. That'll be the first game. So Paolini's the seventh seed.
She the highest seed now left.
Well, she did so well at Roland Garros.
Yeah, so she's the last.
I mean, she's actually really fun to watch as well. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And then Krejcikova versus Ria Bekina. Now, Ria Bekina is the top seed. She's the fourth seed. I think she's from Uzbekistan.
The first three, 1, 2, 3 is gone. Jeez.
Well, that's it. So you've got that to look forward to for Wimbledon. We didn't talk about Currie Cup earlier. Now, the reason I want to bring it up this week is that the box. So obviously the box have an extended squad for a test series. Rusty has gone with the exact same 23 this week as it was for last week
Does everybody go back the initial 39?
So what normally happens is that because there's games, I mean, they're all tied to provinces. Okay. So let's just take the Sharks, for example.
Yeah.
Pepsi Buttelezi's gone there. Trevor Nyokane's gone there. Grant Esterhazen, Maxilma Pimpi. I'm probably forgetting a few others, but they're now playing Currie Cup this weekend. Okay. So they're in the squad. I mean, injuries happen. They could be playing against Portugal. They could be playing Rugby Championship, of course.
Yeah.
But then because there is Currie Cup, they're in the mix, which isn't great for who are the Sharks playing? Griquas. There's also quite a step down here. You're in the box squad, staying in nice hotels. Now you're playing a game at Kimberley.
Now you got to go to Kimberley instead.
Shout out Road Lodge.
You got to say the Formula One, if that's still a thing.
No, there's a couple of nice hotels in Kimberley.
I mean, from what we were talking about the last time, do the international guys not get the break? Will they not let their development team go in? Or
I just think, you know, what it comes back to, it's like you're always playing there. You want to win as a sporting team.
Mm-hmm.
You want all the guys to play. And at the same time, you want to keep box kind of fresh. So Rusty doesn't want a guy sitting on his ass for 3 weeks. If the guy could go play a game, or he needs to play a game. I mean, I don't know what Esterhazen's last few months have been. Because obviously he plays in England. They have a longer window.
Yeah.
I don't know how well his team did this year. So if he hasn't played a competitive game since what? Did he play against Wales? I don't know. Let's just say hypothetically he hasn't played for 3 weeks. It's in his best interest to go have a bit of heads out and henceforth Currie Cup.
So Griquas are getting that work, what you're trying to
Griquas
say.
Griquas are going to get some serious work from a pretty good Sharks team.
Yeah.
That'll be tomorrow, Friday. The Pumas taking on the Lions tomorrow as well. And then Saturday, we've got the Cheetahs, who are the Curry Cup.
Those stay cup.
It's like Arsenal used to be so good in the FA Cup back in the day. That was their pinnacle.
Used to be. I love the words that you've said. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, now they've got bigger fish to fry. Now they're Champions League.
Let's move on.
So excited. I got an Arsenal scarf this week.
Boo.
Which is going to come into the studio.
Boo.
If you are watching on YouTube, you notice how we dressed the table up this week. We've got a ball. We got a nice shit.
Yeah, we're pushing a narrative. Spain, I've called it wrong the whole time. So
that's the official tournament Adidas ball, that, huh? Oh,
thank you so much to the people at the Real Network giving us the real match.
It was actually kissed by Messi and Yamin Lamal.
Thank you, James.
It's actually quite funny. Tony Kroos bathed that ball in his own tears from retiring. So, wrap up with the Curry Cup. We've got the Griffins versus the Blue Bulls, who beat Province away last week.
Yeah.
So that was
also that Sharks team is going to be pretty miserable after losing to the Lions. It was a nice game. I think it was 25-24.
One pointer.
That was a great game. I think, like, you know, Curry Cup is in such a nice place. But the Pumas versus the Griquas, Pumas just put hands on the Griquas as well. There's a lot of entertaining rugby that's going on there. And
I totally agree, because I think the Curry Cup knows where it is now.
Yep.
In the past, it was like, well, you know, Super Rugby kind of killed it, but let's really care about it. So now it's like, well, there's no Super Rugby. It's got its window.
Yeah.
And we know that we need depth to be the best. 100%. And we're very pragmatic about the fact that this is a level of rugby.
Yeah.
And when the final comes around, cool, bring in your stars.
Yeah, so I really loved that. Yo, that Sharks Lion game was actually such a great testament to what Curry Cup rugby is and the talent that we have. There's some really talented guys in the Curry Cup. And I think, you know, Rossi is blessed to have, you know, that all that depth that he has right now. James, I don't know, is there anybody talking crap so I can just respond to a few people?
Don't court it. Look, okay, we're going to come back with our calls for the week. Now, I'm very excited about this. And this is the week where we're going to make these calls, and we're going to have no more comments about saying our calls aren't great. I shouldn't have led with that, because now I've hyped it up too
You've
much.
Hyped it up. I kept quiet. They want to destroy me, these people.
All right. We're going to wrap up the show with our customary calls with Superbets. Now, I say the customary calls because every week we have a bit of a go. And I'm going to defend you mostly here. You took ballsy calls in the Euros, and it wasn't our fault that those guys were just so fatigued and quite boring.
Thank you.
But let me pick it up. So last week, I thought I had a dead cert, and I'm pretty much sure we spoke about Argentina earlier in the show, if you missed it, about what we think is their problem. But I really do think that this is the week for them. Firstly, I'm going to go with the exact same multiplier as last week. I'm going to go for New Zealand to win, Australia to win, SA to win, Argentina to win. It's going to give me odds of 1.82, so my 100 will net a grand total of 2.82. New Zealand, they've never lost. Well, they haven't lost in 30 years at Eden Park. Go with them. Australia, they showed signs last week that they're a decent side who are on the up and up. Wales are only going to get worse with the more beer they have in Australia. SA are going to beat Ireland. It's going to happen. This team is going to be more settled. They're going to win. Argentina, they cannot lose to France. After last week, these young Frenchies went out on a proper jaw. Two of them got arrested for sexual assault.
What?
And then another oak got sent home because he had some racist video on social media. So they're in turmoil right now. And they played Uruguay yesterday. They flew to Montevideo while two of the oaks were in... One of the guys has got form, as they say in Australia. He got banned for a year for a drugs problem. Cocaine was, he tested positive for cocaine, where he said, I went to a party and someone just gave it to me.
Not even juice.
And this oak has now been arrested for a potential sexual assault. So France they should never have won last week. Okay. And this week, there's just so many dramas and sideshows that go with my bet this week. Trust me. New Zealand, Australia, SA to win, 1.82 on the odds. I'm so excited about that. I've already put my bet down. Sandile, what are we going with you?
Okay, cool. I'm going with an all-Spanish affair.
Going full Spanish.
All Spanish. Let me start with Wimbledon, Carlos Alcaraz. Going to take it home. Trust me on this one. I know his form is great.
Maybe you should not say trust me, because that's when you say
trust me on this one.
You.
His form is great. He's been playing incredible tennis. And we're going to get the Novak and Carlos final, and he's going to beat Novak. And then I've got in the finals. You know, I've been talking crazy about England the whole time, but I think the way Spain is playing, Spain is going to win it all. Enterprising football, guys, please. These are my calls. All Spanish affair. Yes, just Yeah.
Okay, so if you're going to go full Spanish with Sandila there, you've got 2.38. So $100 down will get you a grand total of 338 back. Or if you have a nice little bet bonus there, you could get even more. Because that's what often happens when you're betting for a while. And, you know, we were saying from the first week, you get up to 5,000 Rand in bet bonuses. So deposit bonuses. You put money down, it'll be matched by Superbet using the code OTB. So play around. It's a lot of fun. And I think as we get to the business end of tournaments, I'm not saying it ever gets easier. I'm sure as hell not saying that these are certainties. But yeah, I think Spain is a good bet. I think England have a ceiling. I think the Spanish team has got so much belief. And as you pointed out, they're going to play with some fluency and a lot less pressure. There is so much pressure. There is Protea type pressure on this English team.
100%.
Yeah. So OTB on the sign-up bonuses there. We want to do one more thing, because I forgot in the foray of the start of the show. When you go into ClipDrift, that's gold.co.za. It's a game we're playing for every BOC test match. Pick the game and you can spin. So I told you I got Malcolm Marks for 2 weeks in a row. He's not going to score a lot of points. Love the guy, but he's not going to... He's coming off the bench. He's not scoring
millions of
kicks. Or might score some tries. Actually, I take it back. I think he scored the second most tries in the last 2 years.
Yes, he has. Off the good... Curtly Andrews?
Sure. Charlotte, no, your guy came on and he was great in the scrum, but I don't think he got a lot of spins for scrumming.
Yeah,
anyway, Malcolm Marks is my guy. Sandita's got Vili LaRue, which is great. So you get these guys after the game, you get a spin. So I've got a second phone, obviously. I'm going to play right now and I'm going to spin for a second guy. So when I was a bit despondent last week and I got Peter Steptoe-Toye. And then with that, I got to the top of our On the Bounce pool, which you can join as well. So I have got this week... Fuck.
Who did you get?
I've got Gerard Steenkamp. James, I got your. There I was laughing at it. I've got Gerard Steenkamp here.
Yeah. That's it. No, don't try this.
Okay, so I'm not going to get a lot of spins there.
There's
but
no third anyway, phone.
ClipDrift, that's gold.co.za. It's a really fun game. And once you're in, as soon as you hear a team announcement through the week, just go in there, get a player, and you can win really great prizes. There will be activations around the stadium if you're going to Kings Park this weekend. And that pretty much wraps it up for this week, Sandile. What do you want to finish on?
Cool. I just want to give a quick shout out to a couple of guys from the BAL who will be playing in the G League, the NBA Summer League G League, especially Samuel Otele, DHS legend, and he played absolutely amazing for the Cape Town Tigers during the BAL. He's been called up by the New York Knicks. I think that's super exciting for South African basketball and just basketball in this continent. So please, guys, follow him at I Am Buckets. He is the future of African basketball, and he goes up to the NBA G League. So I think that's awesome. And yeah, that's how I want to wrap up the show.
Amazing. So yeah, James, I think that is a wrap for this week. Episode 5 is done. Go Borca and Spain and Djokovic. I want to see number 25.
And Carlos Alcaraz.
Thanks for joining us. Catch you next week on The Bounce Show.